Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 162 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, live, you like this DC, and a little change to previous weeks, from Salford Quays in a broom cupboard,
ironically.
I know. And live from London in your broom cupboard is David Cameron Walker.
Hello.
We should have a battle of the broom cupboards, if possible, at some point. Mine doesn't have broken aircon, though, so I think mine might be a little bit better.
I don't know what it actually means, a battle of the broom cupboards, but I'm up for having one. Why not?
Why not? Welcome to a special edition of We Are Going Up, celebrating the cult heroes of the Football League. Those players that, as a fan, you... I was going to say idolise. Yeah, you do idolise. Maybe not for necessarily the right reasons, but they stick with you no matter how good slash bad they are. Do you think that's a nice way of selling what we've got coming up?
Well, I would say it's the players that you loved above all others, for whatever reason that may be. It's the players that, when you think of the great times that you've had supporting your team, and the low times even, they're the player that you think of first.
Absolutely. Now, all that to come, and some good guests, loads of fans as well. We'll read some tweets out. Thank you to everyone who got in touch. But first, it would be remiss of us not to mention that after a couple of quiet weeks, the one week we actually decide to do this, it all kicks off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In the Football League. Managerial changes, four of them to briefly mention. And if my screen scrolls down, I can... There we go. Brentford, the experiment with Marcus Dijkhuizen, that ended.
Yep.
That's over before it's even started.
Yeah, did you see his tweets about that? He's on Twitter.
I don't follow
and,
him.
And he talked to the press and commented on it pretty swiftly after it happened. And he basically said that he was obviously very disappointed and it was kind of really swiftly dealt with. He had like a minute. He literally got taken in, 1 minute conversation. I don't know whether he was speaking exactly literally or not. I'm sure it was a little bit longer than a minute. But obviously it was very short, swift execution, if you like, which obviously he's disappointed with. And it's a surprise in some respects. Obviously, they've had a bad start, certainly compared to last season. But you would think that for a club and for a chairman that puts so much emphasis on statistics and believing in the numbers, you wouldn't necessarily think they'd pull the trigger so quickly if they believed in their man and their methods. And I wouldn't have expected them to doubt themselves so quickly. Or maybe they've seen something that isn't really working and they've decided to do it. But I'm surprised that they've gone so early with this one, because they've had a lot of injuries, Brentford. You know, it's not been good results, but they had key players, key signings that they made in the summer, injured for long periods. So that hasn't helped them. And they've given Lee Carsley
the job
immediately.
Get Gravesen in,
to the end of the season. Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to see that partnership. Talk about two cult heroes there. But, you know, it's not like we're in March and you can give a manager the job to the end of the season to tie you over. You're still right at the start of the season. So to give him, to put the faith in Lee Carsley, it might be a good thing to stabilise the club, but it's somewhat surprising that they're not considering their options.
Indeed. Now, we're not going to sort of go into detail on each of these sackings because we're going to concentrate on the cult heroes, but Steve Evans has gone.
Mm.
Steve Evans has to decide what Steve Evans does next, I believe, was his exact quote. He's gone from Rotherham. Fleetwood, really surprised by this. Graham Alexander has left. I think they lost three games in a row, but they were excellent when I saw them earlier this season. He's gone from Highbury. And, I mean, who would have seen this one coming, DC? Terry Butcher, gone from Newport County already. I should have placed a significant amount of money on that happening. 1st of October, he's out the door. So that's what's been going on. Wolves are up for sale.
I think that might be it for Terry now, to be honest with you.
I think so. Yeah. Back to Inverness, maybe. Wolves have been put up for sale.
Yeah.
That's happened. And they went and won 3-0 at Fulham straight away after that. And I've got to squeeze this in there while I can. Bury, Have you seen the table in League One recently?
I have, mate.
Flying high, 5 straight wins, 16, count them, 16 games unbeaten away from home, going back to January.
Amazing. And you you turned your nose up at me pre-season when I tipped you to be one of my promotion contenders.
I did.
Look what's happening. And Burton up there with you as well.
Yeah, Burton are flying top of the table. I was at the Coventry game at the weekend, which was a game we hung on in towards the end. And then Peterborough away midweek, 3-2 victory. Some very nice tweets by some of the journos and Peterborough fans who saw the game. And yeah, Leon Clark banging him in. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because it might not necessarily stay this positive throughout the rest of the season.
So, well, Adrian Durham was singing your praises.
Mine.
So you've got some excellent players, not you,
right,
and Barry. Yeah. Well, I'm sure he thinks you're a fine broadcaster. But he was praising Barry for the football they played. Wasn't too happy with the referee
from
Tuesday night, was he?
But, he wasn't at all.
Something else, I've got something for you.
Oh, go on. Any other business to start?
This news doesn't exactly compare to the previous stories that we've discussed there, but it just caught my eye earlier and I thought it was a bit odd. The at Football League, the official Football League Twitter account.
Yes.
It tweeted, what time? Yesterday. No, today. 40 minutes ago, 7 p.m. today. Offer up to 50% off designer menswear on Paul Costello Man.co.uk in their mid-season sale, including ties, shirts and suits. It just...
I thought you were about to say Paul Pesky Salido.
No.
Then.
That'd be good.
He's got
it?
His own range of suits.
But it just struck me as a strange thing. Why are the Football League tweeting out offers? 50% off designer menswear.
Hacked or short of cash? One of the two.
Very strange.
I would suggest maybe the latter. Maybe the latter. That said, if there's any products you'd like us to plug on the We Are Going Up Twitter, please do get in touch at Wagyu Podcast and we'll do just that. Right then. So, coming up over the course of this podcast, we are going to hear from various fans. We asked you last week to get in touch with your club's cult heroes. Thank you to everyone who has got in touch. So, clubs such as Bristol City, Bradford, Leeds, Nottingham Forest, Yeovil, Bury as well. There's more all on the way.
Millwall. Don't forget Millwall.
Never forget about Millwall. But we're going to start with, first of all, a man who made 313 appearances over 6 years for the Tractor Boys in East Anglia. Not to mention 46 goals during that time as well. Bit of a fan's favourite at Portman Road, Mr. Matt Holland.
Not just a hero at Ipswich. Charlton.
Yes.
Played well over 200 games for Charlton. I mean, a hero as well to fans of Bournemouth. And also Republic of Ireland as well. A fine career on the international stage for Ireland.
I remember his goal in the 2002 World Cup.
Yeah.
I remember watching that very early in the morning. I can't remember who it was against, but I remember they won 1-0. Was it Spain?
Yeah, he missed a penalty in the shootout.
Okay.
He scored the goal.
Well, I'll look that up. Born in Bury as well. Great man. So why have we got Matt Holland on? Where's this all come from?
Well, we had a tweet in this afternoon, in fact, as we record from this, from an Ipswich
Andre
Town fan.
Andre Devereux, who says, Matt Holland at Ipswich,
Andre.
The man
it's
could...
Not Andre, is it?
Oh, sorry, Andrew. Why did I say Andre?
I was going to say, it's not Andre. Did I get that wrong? No, I didn't. It's Andrew, yeah.
There you go. Well, Andrew or Andre, whichever he prefers. Matt Holland at Ipswich, the man could do no wrong. The very definition of consistency, a true cult hero.
Absolutely. And a nice guy. He'll be familiar to many of our listeners through his work in the media these days, but a fine player. And he was kind enough to sit down with us a bit earlier on.
Yes. Well, we actually had him on the Prostate Cancer UK thing last year, didn't we?
My mind isn't
playing tricks on me. Okay then, right, so DC caught up earlier on today with Mr. Matt Holland, Ipswich Town's cult hero. This is what happened.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast.
So, Matt Holland, thanks very much for agreeing to having a chat with us. Andrew Devereux on Twitter, Ipswich Town fan, has tweeted in, and he said, Matt Holland at Ipswich Town FC, the man could do no wrong, the very definition of consistency, a true cult hero. And when you're talking about cult heroes, it's kind of a subjective sort of term. For some people, it may be a maverick sort of striker. For some, it might be a crazy sort of goalkeeper that's at a club for 20 years or so. But also, and this is where I think you fit into the category, it's for players that are always there, always consistent in the heart of the action, in the central midfield as you were. And I think from your time from at Bournemouth through to when you were at Charlton, there's about 10 seasons where you pretty much didn't miss a game ever.
Well, I didn't miss many, no, that's for sure. I think it was something like 6 years without missing a league game after leaving the last season at Bournemouth, I think, and the first 5 years at Ipswich. I didn't actually miss a league game. The only time I did was actually when I was on international duty, that we only had two players called up for international duty, so that meant the game at Gillingham went ahead, and I ended up missing that game. So that was a bit of a disappointment, if I'm honest. That's very kind of Andrew to say those kind words. It's funny, I think his memory must have forgotten the bad games that I had at Ipswich Town. It's a long time since I was there now. I think 12 years since I left the club. But yeah, I suppose I always prided myself on being consistent. And when you talk about cult heroes as well, it was for me the connection I had with the Ipswich supporters, I always, which I'm remembered for, is for clapping the fans at the end of a game and going around the whole of the stadium and doing that. So you sort of get remembered for little things like that. I know Chris Powell at Charlton, for instance, he used to when we'd won, that is, go down the tunnel and then come out and do a little jump in front of the supporters. So Luke Chambers now at Ipswich Town, I know he's the captain, and he does a little fist pump to the supporters. So little things like that players get remembered for as well. But it's very kind of him to say those nice words.
How important is that connection with the fans? And you mentioned some examples there, and yourself. As football fans, we've all been in the stands, and we've all had our favourite players, whether it be, you know, when we were kids or looking at the game nowadays. But you often hear people talk about the game nowadays and commenting on some of the players, particularly when you get towards the higher echelons of the game, that perhaps there isn't that appreciation from the players to what it means to be a player for that club and represent those fans.
I think sometimes in the defence of the Premier League players, it's not so much them not wanting to connect with the fans. It's more the club and how they deal with those players and try and keep them protected, if you like. You know, even I think at Man United, for instance, when it comes to the after the game and their cars, they go and park their cars for them and then bring the cars right to the entrance so they don't have to sort of mix with all the supporters after the game as well. So I think it's from a player's point of view, I would defend them in lots of ways, because I think that they would perhaps, you know, mingle with the fans better than they do, but it's simply because they are protected by the clubs to a certain extent. But there are clubs that are very good in the community and do a lot of good community work, and I think that's recognised. But I think that connection is vital, you know, particularly in the Premier League. There is, as I say, maybe that the club do protect the players a little bit from that side of it. But I do think it's important that the fans can connect with the players, and the players at times maybe could do a little bit more.
When you were playing for, not just for Ipswich, but for Charlton, for Bournemouth, all the clubs you played for, you're often captain of the team as well in the position that you played. And how aware were you when you were putting on that shirt, putting on that armband, of how much it meant to represent those clubs and how much it meant to represent the fans? When you were playing, you're out there in the middle. Did you shut it all out, or are you really connecting with the fans as you're playing, if you like?
Well, it's difficult. I suppose when you cross that white line, the only thing on your mind and the only thought is to try and get 3 points, no matter how it comes. It's trying to win the match. So in terms of then thinking about the supporters, maybe not. But, you know, I'm a supporter, I'm a football fan, and I know what it's like watching a team and thinking, you know, could they do a bit more, and perhaps could he have gone that extra yard? And so, you know, I always pride myself on giving 100%. You know, you don't always play well, and you have poor performances and things don't go well for you in a match day. But I always felt that I gave 100%, and I think that supporters do forgive an awful lot if they see someone doing that.
You had some great times at Ipswich, you know, the promotion to the Premier League, the playoff win at Wembley, getting into Europe. But if you could pinpoint maybe specific games, probably will be that playoff final, but what were your real highlights of your time at Ipswich? Maybe there are some that we wouldn't necessarily think of.
Crikey, I mean, I had some fabulous times there. Six years, and from the moment I arrived to the moment I left, I can't speak highly enough of the football club. Even now, I'm only sort of 20 minutes away from it, which I'd love to get down to Portman Road far more often than I do, but unfortunately work doesn't permit me to get there too often. But I love, you know, I love the football club and love going to watch them whenever I possibly can. God, blimey, I was supporters player of the year twice, so that stands out for me. The playoff final, of course, is one that everyone will always remember. European adventure was great. Getting into the UEFA Cup and you know, playing against Inter Milan was unbelievable. Alan Armstrong header at Portman Road. Soars beat them 1-0, which was a fantastic result. Didn't quite go to plan in the San Siro, but the 10,000, I think it was, maybe 12,000 Ipswich fans, it was almost double the, half the attendance there that night of Ipswich supporters. That will always, I will always remember. So there's been some amazing times, and it's difficult to pinpoint, you know, exactly which one stands out the most, but certainly the playoff final and the European adventure, I think most people will remember fondly.
And your time at Charlton, now you would have played with a man who, I think, whilst, as I'm sure you'll agree, a very different player to yourself, but certainly epitomises the term cult hero, and that's Paolo Di Canio.
Yeah.
What was it like to play with him and also to train with him and just to be around him?
It was an education, if I'm honest. You know, a lot of people won't think this, but there was nobody trained harder than Paolo Di Canio. He was the first one in the training ground. He was in the gym before training. He was the last one off the training field. Then he was back in the gym after that. I thought he was a brilliant example to younger players. You know, he was 35 years of age when he joined Charlton, 34, 35, and he was always towards the front of the running. He was always desperate to be the very best he could be, whether it was the running, whether it was the five-a-side, whether it was an 11-a-side, whatever it might be, he always wanted to win. And I think that for someone who'd been there, seen it, done it, to still be doing that at 34, 35 was a brilliant example to some of the younger players. Yes, he could be mad, and he could have his moments where you think, crikey, what's the matter with you today? If a decision goes against him in the five-a-side, it's like the end of the world. But I couldn't speak highly enough of the work rate that he put in on a daily basis to be the very best he could be.
When you're playing with a player of Di Canio's sort of ability, is it at all at times frustrating in terms of, you know, how good he can be and they can win matches for you in a split second with a piece of genius, but, you know, also times when he might just do a bit too much, or, you know, or is it, you know, you accept that he's the best player, we've got to give him the ball all the time?
It can be frustrating, yeah, I would say. But I think as a player, certainly the type of player that I was, I recognised that you need a balance in your side and in your squad. You know, you can't all be the same player. You can't have just 11 workhorses. You can't just have 11 flair players. You've got to have that balance. And when you've got someone like him, you always felt that you could win a game. You know, your defence and your holding midfield players, they can hold out, and you can be solid defensively and you know, keep a clean sheet. But you've still got to score at the other end. So you need people who can do something different, who are mavericks, who will try different things. And he was one of those. And more often than not, he did come up with a moment of magic that, you know, provided a goal, scored a goal. And so I think as a player, you accept him for what he is and realise that actually, no, it's not through lack of effort. He's certainly working, and things might not always go his way, but he could win you a game. And I think you do need that balance in your side.
And just finally, going back even further than your playing career, when you were growing up as a fan of football, hoping to be an aspiring young pro one day, who were the cult heroes that you really idolised when you were a young man?
Yeah, I guess I was a Man United fan. I grew up, I was born in Bury, and I was not too far away from Old Trafford, so I used to go and watch them quite a bit. So at that time, I guess they signed Brian Robson, I think, in 1981, and he was the player that I always looked up to and aspired to, try and model your game. I'm not saying I was anywhere near as good as Brian Robson, but that box-to-box midfielder, someone who would be willing to put a tackle in. You know, he was playing on with injuries, scored important goals, led the team, he was captain. So I would say that Brian Robson was the one that I looked up to as a kid.
Did you ever think when you were watching Brian Robson as a young man, as a young Manchester United fan, did you ever think you would be in that position one day of being a cult hero yourself?
Cool. No, not at that stage. No, crikey. I mean, certainly you dream of it. I went and watched my dad from the age of three, stood on the touchline and loved football, absolutely loved it. And so I always dreamt of becoming a professional footballer, dreamt of actually winning the FA Cup, dreamt of walking the steps at Wembley and lifting the FA Cup. So you had the dreams as a child, but it's fantasy. It's something that you think happens to everyone else and not yourself. But I was very fortunate, managed to do that, and I didn't play in an FA Cup final, but I did play in the playoff final, which I've already mentioned at Ipswich. And so to walk up the steps at Wembley, lift a trophy was, all right, not the FA Cup, but it was certainly a second best and a fantastic occasion. So very, very fortunate to have done it.
People will look at footballers and they will see the amount of money that they've earned. You know, I'm sure you didn't earn the money that the top stars do today, but I'm sure you did okay for yourself over the course of your career. But sometimes people focus too much on that side of things, I think. What does it feel like as a footballer and to look back on your career now and to know that regardless of all the fame and fortune and anything else that came with the game, you represented football clubs and you really meant something to fans, thousands upon thousands of fans up and down the country for the teams you played for?
Okay, I mean, it means an awful lot, to be honest. I mean, I was named in the Hall of Fame at Ipswich a couple of years back, and that was a real honour. You know, when I look back at some of the names that are on that Hall of Fame at Ipswich, to be just on alongside those names and on that list is just a real honour for me. I suppose it's very humbling, if you're honest. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have been a professional footballer. I mean, you mentioned the money that's involved. You know, when I look back on my career, I don't think about, that contract I got there and I earned that. I look back and think, well, we got promoted with Ipswich. We finished fifth in the Premier League. I think when I was at Charlton, we finished, you know, in Charlton's highest ever position in the Premier League, we finished seventh. Bournemouth, I was part of the Great Escape. You know, the transfer fee that Bournemouth received for me helped them survive. Look where they are now. So they're the things that I look back on with an immense amount of pride. I mean, my dad followed me here, there and everywhere, and I've got all the scrapbooks at home from when I was sort of 6, 7, 8 playing matches and all the way through. And it's fantastic now to be able to look back and see some of the stuff that I've done, show my children some of the stuff that I did, and hopefully, you know, one day perhaps they'll follow my footsteps. You never know.
Ipswich Town's cult hero himself, Mr. Matt Holland, speaking to DC a little bit earlier on this cult heroes special edition, if you will, of We Are Going Up. Top guy. And just a reminder really of how incredibly quickly Ipswich rose from, you know, that playoff final in the Championship to playing in Europe and then suddenly back down again.
I know. It was an amazing rise and a very swift fall, wasn't it? And as I alluded to in the interview there, Matt was a player that you could rely on. And those Ipswich fans who were fans of the team during that time, he would have been a constant presence in that team, constantly in the middle, in the heart of the action, in the heart of the team as a central midfielder. And he's not a player. You heard me talk about Di Canio. He's not a spectacular player. He's not a very skillful player. He'd be the first to admit that. But he was a man who always worked hard, always gave his best, and, you know, was a real solid base for Ipswich, for Charlton, for Ireland, for Bournemouth when he was younger. And you need those players. And I'm not surprised that Andrew suggested him as a cult hero, because, you know, we relate to those players. We relate to those players that come up to us at the end of the games and they will salute us and they will clap us, even if we've lost 5-0 away from home. And that relationship between players and between fans, it is really, really important.
I'll tell you what, the sign of a true cult hero is when the fans wear T-shirts with that player's name on still. And I'm sure the Ipswich fans do.
I'm sure they do. We mentioned Lloyd Doyley last week.
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a Lloyd Doyley T-shirt that I ordered from the website called Cult Zeros. Have you heard of that website?
Yes. Well, do you remember many years ago when we were in the studio at T'other Place when I revealed my Leno John Lewis's name as a shop T-shirt to you? And that was ordered from that very same website. So there you go. Check out those T-shirts if you can. Right. More Cult Heroes chat in just a second.
You're listening to We Are Going Up. We've got the Football League covered.
So you are listening to We Are Going Up's Cult Hero Special. Matt Holland speaking to us a little bit earlier. And another man we are going to catch up with, but we can't actually do it on this show, unfortunately, because of timings, is a Bristol City legend, a man who had two spells at the club, around about 400 appearances, 50, 60 goals. And now he cleans the kits, Mr. Scott Murray, DC, who was suggested by various people.
Yeah, I know the exiled Robin was one of the guys that suggested it. A few other Bristol City fans as well. And as we'll hear, Sean Thorne, who's been on the pod a number of times talking about Bristol City, he actually suggested him as well and was recorded a bit for us. And I've heard Sean talk about Scott Morrow on a number of occasions. And from the tweets we got as well, he very much seems to be somebody that the Bristol City fans hold in really high regard. He's still at the club there. And I think there are a number, and I'll talk about someone else similar to this later on. I think the multiple spells at a club is, is another hallmark of a cult hero. Somebody that, you know, leaves, maybe doesn't have the success elsewhere, and is pining for the glory days and for the place where he calls home, and the fans want him back, and it can often, not always, but often be a glorious sort of second time around. I can think of a couple of Watford players like that over the years. And a great choice, I think, and a man that still has a good, strong relationship with the Bristol City fans right up to this day, a good character as well. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to speak to him just yet. He has agreed to the interview. You'll see this. If you follow Scott Murray on Twitter, you'll be able to see, because he's tweeted us a number of times, sort of quoting our tweet as if not even sort of privately replying to us that he wants that he's up for coming on.
Flaunting his cult statusness.
Yeah, but he won't. He hasn't actually, as of time of recording, confirmed and got back to us with his number. So it's Twitter admin that's preventing you from hearing Scott Murray. So what we thought we'd do, and this is a good opportunity to maybe kickstart a bit of an ongoing series of episodes. So, I mean, let's try and speak to a number of cult heroes between now and the end of the season and beyond. And what better man to start with in the coming weeks with Scott Murray?
Kind of like an in conversation with, if you will.
Yeah.
When we were at university, the TV channel there had a strand called In Conversation With, where bands such as the Hoosiers would sit down. I do vaguely remember. So hopefully we'll hopefully get Scott on the show in the next few weeks
we will be on.
Okay, let's hear some of your cult heroes. Thanks to everyone who's got in touch, and we're going to start with friend of the show Sean Thorne, BBC Radio Bristol Sport, talking all about the man we just mentioned, Mr. Scotty Murray.
If you're talking cult heroes for Bristol City, then it's got to be Scotty Murray. The reasons for that, well, there's the obvious ones about him being so City through and through that despite, you know, his playing days are behind him, he's still at the club in a kit man capacity. All the managers want to keep him around because he's a personification of the club. But there's also the classic Scotty moments, like when he scored a brace at Ninian Park against Cardiff and just ran past all the fans with his ear cupped. An image that's now on one of those massive surfer flags in the East End at Ashton Gate. There was the fact that he scored 27 goals in the 2002-03 season. There's the fact that he scored a disgusting chip against Middlesbrough right over Mark Schwartz's head in an FA Cup match, which was made all the more outrageous that he scored it with his left foot, which he usually only used for standing on. Also, when he came back to Bristol City, I remember me and the boys who I went to football with at the time seeing that Scotty had come back on CFAX, which led to us phoning pretty much every City fan we knew to tell them that Scotty had returned. Most of them reacted as if we told them about a lottery win. That's how much he meant to the City fans. I'll finish off with, he was even spotted in the crowd at a wrestling show in Bristol, and the wrestler, swear down, got out of the ring mid-match and started a Scott Super Scott chant, which the crowd heartily joined in with. So yeah, cult hero for Bristol City, no doubt, is Scotty Murray.
Hi guys, my name's Peter Bryars from the 92.net and I'm a Yeovil Town fan. At Hewish Park, we've got a few cult heroes from the core of the conference-winning team, the biggest of which is probably Terry Skiverton, whose heroic performances spanning over a decade and knack of nicking a goal from centre-back made him a firm fans' favourite. But there's also Abdou El Colty. Far from being a star member of the squad, he was a utility player and could step in at fullback on either side or anywhere across the midfield. He was at the club around the time the Only Fools and Horses Christmas special aired. You know, the one where they go to France and they accidentally bring back an unexpected passenger called Gary. And due to his slight resemblance of Gary, pretty much every time he got the ball, the cry of "Gary!" echoed from the terraces.
Hi, I'm David, and my football team is Leeds United, and my cult hero is Andrew Hughes. Andy Hughes was a integral part of our promotion winning team from League One. And the reason he was a cult hero, not because he was outstanding in any way really, but it was just because he got Leeds United. He really understood the passion of the fans. And ever since he left, he still understands what the fans feel. You know, he's a Manchester boy as well, which never really helps, you know, endear a person to Leeds fans. He's just always been really passionate about Leeds United, despite the fact he's not a Leeds United fan. And that's why he is my cult hero.
Hello, I'm Stephen, a Nottingham Forest fan. And our cult hero is Jason Lee. He was a striker who played for us in the mid-90s during our Premier League years. He might not have been the greatest of footballers, but he was a useful understudy to the likes of Stan Collymore and Brian Roy. And his knack of chipping in with a few key goals and his hard work up front won over the Forest supporters. You might remember that he was parodied quite a bit by Badil and Skinner on fantasy football back in the day. And he also had that famous haircut, which sparked the chant, "He's got a pineapple on his head." So he might not have been one of the greatest strikers that Forest have ever had, but he's fondly remembered by many supporters.
More of your cult heroes on the way later in the show. That was just a small sample of the ones we received. And every club has a cult hero, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely. Do you want to know mine? Not Lloyd Doyley. Another one. I thought of another one.
Okay. How are we doing this?
You've got to try and guess him. I'm going to give you some clues.
Okay. Yes, right. No questions.
So this is a former Watford player.
Okay. Striker.
Yes.
Played for Watford predominantly in the 2000s.
Predominantly, yeah.
Okay, so played for Watford.
Yeah, actually, yeah, all completely, yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Played for Watford before they were in the, under Beaveroy, before that time.
Yes.
Okay. Right, God, you're testing my knowledge here. English?
No.
Right. European?
Yes.
An international?
Yes.
Okay. Ever played in a major tournament?
No.
Okay. Ever played for another English club?
Yes.
Okay. Is he well known for scoring lots of goals for Watford?
He did score lots of goals for Watford. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Is he still playing?
No.
Is he a manager?
No.
Is he involved in football? To the
not
best
that
of
I'm
your
aware
knowledge.
Of.
Right.
Not, certainly not in this country.
Sorry, what was the answer to the tournament? Has he ever played at a major tournament?
No, he hasn't.
Right. Is he Latvian?
He's not Latvian.
Oh, okay. Is he a target man?
Yeah.
I'm trying to. I'm not very. You know, Watford's not my team, so to ask me for early noughties Watford strikers who are not English is quite a tough task.
You definitely know him.
Can you give me a clue? Can you give me a clue?
Well, he played for three other clubs,
right?
In England, all of whom are currently in the Championship.
Right. Okay.
But Watford were his first club in England.
Has he played in the Premier League?
He has played in the Premier League.
Okay.
He also adheres to the aforementioned two-spell rule of a cult hero. He had two spells at Watford.
Oh, dear. Did he play for Leeds?
He did not play for Leeds.
Has he played for a London team?
He has played for another London team. He actually played for two other London teams.
Okay. Has he played for Spurs?
No.
Chelsea?
No, downsize your expectations.
Wimbledon?
No.
Okay, Charlton?
No.
QPR?
Yes.
Right, he's played for QPR.
I bet loads of people have got this, listen to this already.
Yeah, I haven't got a clue here. I've no idea, mate.
So Watford,
I'm going down a blind alley.
You've got
here.
QPR, another London team in the Premier League. Actually, there's another. There's four
teams.
There's four teams he's actually played for, all of whom are in the Championship. Just remembered. Not West Ham. No,
I've no idea, mate. You've
right,
got to
the
tell
other
me
clubs. I'll tell you the other clubs if you can get it. So, also play for Fulham.
Right.
Also play for Bolton.
Right.
Also played for Cardiff.
Cardiff.
Striker, Right. Brilliant in the air. Very much the short version of Rudy Gestede at the moment. He's absolutely brilliant in the air. Heide Helgeson.
Right, Heide Helgeson. Okay.
Would you ever? Would you ever have got him?
No, never.
he is my. I was thinking about this in the week, and Lloyd Doyley is one of my favourite players of all time. But Helgeson for me does epitomise that cult hero status because he isn't a superstar. He's not scored loads and loads and loads of goals for the teams he's played for. I think we're the only club that he scored 20 goals for in a season, and that was only one season that he was with us. But he scored goals wherever he's been at a decent enough level. And he's, as I said, the best player I've ever seen in the air. He's not the tallest man. I don't even think he was necessarily over 6 foot, but he was superb at leaping and fearless, utterly fearless. And there's a moment that will live long in the memory of all Watford fans when they think of Helgeson. And it's not to do with something that he did on the pitch. It was after he scored a goal. I think this was in the season after we were relegated from the Premier League under Graham Taylor. And he went to celebrate with the fans and he went to jump over the barriers. And we had like the wooden barriers back then that were kind of like a sort of pyramid, sort of triangle sort of structure, if you can imagine what I mean. And he sort of stood, he jumped up on the advertising hoarding and sort of balancing on the point of this triangular structure, and it fell. It fell backwards, and with it, he went clattering down onto the floor, flat on his back, head hit the floor, and got up. Got up, carried on playing as if nothing had happened. And I remember seeing him play as well against Chelsea in the FA Cup. I think it was the third round, and it was at Vicarage Road. And we drew 2-2. He actually scored a goal early on that wasn't over the line but was given, much to my joy and all the other Watford fans. But I think it was Marcel Desailly and John Terry were the two centre-backs. Certainly Desailly, I remember, being taught a lesson. I mean, this is one of the world's great central defenders, a man that's won everything you could wish to win in the game. And Helgeson, a championship player at the time, he absolutely dominated him, won every ball in the air, muscled him out of the picture every time they came up against each other, and it was a fantastic performance. He was a man that wasn't skillful. He's a man that wasn't quick, but he was a man that left everything out there on the pitch, and we adored him. We absolutely adored him, and you know, he's certainly up there in my sort of top two or three favourite players of all time in a Watford shirt, and undoubtedly he is a cult hero.
I might put some like soaring instrumental music under that. That was very much like.
I'd be interested to hear what people, fans of QPR, of Cardiff, of Bolton, of Fulham. I think QPR and Cardiff probably the other two clubs that would hold him in highest esteem, because even recently when QPR were in the Premier League, when they came up under Warnock, he still scored goals and he still held his own when he was well into his 30s then. So he's a well-loved player by more than just Watford fans, I think.
You're listening to an ode to Heide Helgeson on the We Are Going Up podcast. Would you like some more from listeners?
Yeah.
This is from Matties and Morecambe fan. May I suggest Kevin Ellison for your cult hero show, the biggest wind-up merchant in the Football League.
And that's an interesting point, because cult heroes by their nature are players who are loved by their own fans and who will be remembered long in the memories of the clubs they've played for. But they're also quite often, and Kevin Ellison's a great example, remembered by other fans but for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Players that you hate to come up against because they wind you up. But when he's on your team, and I imagine Kevin Ellison would be very much like this for the Morecambe fans, you know, they love him. But other teams, you know, he'll foul them, he'll get last-minute goals, score goals out of nowhere. And, I mean, Robbie Savage has got to be someone like this as well. A despised player for so many reasons by so many people. But I'm sure...
Is he a cult hero, Savage? Is he cult?
I think maybe. I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear fans of Leicester City.
He's not very cult anymore because he's omnipresent.
No, do you know what I mean, though? And there are countless players like that down the years, you know?
And the thing about Ellison as well, he's the kind of guy who would, if he missed a chance and your fans gave him some stick, he'd have a word with the fans behind the goal, or he'd offer a little bit of sarcastic applause, and that'd get everyone riled up. And then when he scored, he'd run over and he'd cup his ear to the fans. That is the kind of character we're talking about here. But I do think with players like him, you know, he's an excellent player as well, which, I mean, some of these cult heroes are going to be cult heroes because they were useless or they played 5 minutes, like the old Ali Dia or Ali Dye or whatever at Southampton. But there are players like Ellison who were cult because, against all the odds, given their physique or their age or whatever, their ability on the deck, they can still hack it.
Akinfenwa.
Yes.
Akinfenwa's a great example.
Yeah, and he, obviously now, Twitter and everything has helped him build his cult status in many ways. He's now very much asking people to tweet him goal celebrations before games and stuff, which is great. Mark Cosgrove, Leeds, cult hero in recent time was Andy Hughes. What else have we got here? Danny, the Basildon Blue. Adam Barrett, Southend fan and legend. Always helps when they're a fan of your club as well.
Yeah.
That always goes down well. James says, always got a soft spot for Martin O'Connor at Birmingham. He was a warrior. The other end of the scale, Christoph Duguri's goals kept us up. And a couple of older ones here, which I did enjoy, because these are players I haven't heard of before, and I had to Google image search these players. Gary Briggs for Blackpool back in the 80s.
No idea.
Yeah, make sure you Google. There's a fantastic, like, Panini of the time equivalent sort of cutout of him. And also Ted McMinn, suggested by Jonathan Rogers for Derby County back in the day. So I'm going to include some pictures of these people on the website where we put the podcast up, so good, you can see some of these faces.
What about you then, mate? Would you choose?
We're going to play in a second a clip of a Bury fan, I think it's Rich, mentioning John Paskin, who was a player that played for Bury very briefly in the mid-90s. One I remember was Laurent Dujaffo. Now, I'm going to do some research on this guy. He was very much an enigmatic French striker. You could also have Bai Chung Bataya, the first Indian ever to play in British football at Bury. If Bai Chung Bataya was joining Bury now in 2015, think of all the Facebook fans and the Twitter followers he'd bring with him. It wasn't quite the same back in 2001. He was just an average central midfielder, as it happened. Laurent Dujaffo played in the late 90s. Here he is. He's a retired Beninese footballer. Jaffo, born in France, moved to Africa at 2 years old. Let's have a look at some of the teams he played for. He played for Montpellier, Chamois Norte, Red Star Paris, Ayr United, Bury, Stockport County, Sheffield United, Aberdeen and Mansfield. His career appearances, 50 goals in 250 games. Well, that's not actually too bad. He's now working as a football agent, assisting Sheffield United with their scouting. I remember he joined us in the Neil Warnock era.
He sounds like a Neil Warnock kind of player.
Yeah, which would explain why he ended up going to Sheffield United for two seasons. We played Sheffield United on the TV in a game I've still got a VHS of somewhere, knocking around in the loft at home. 3-3 it finished. And I remember he scored a goal. He was chucking it down. I think it's a Friday night, and he scored a goal where he went up with a keeper, Sheffield United keeper, basically elbowed the guy in the face and sort of nodded the ball in, and the goal was given. So we all absolutely loved him while their players were running around chasing the referee. Just an overly physical, not very good on the deck, aggressive, always in trouble with a referee, that kind of character. Mm. On your team, I wouldn't say you loved him, but you've certainly made things interesting. So that would be one of mine. But we've got loads to get through. Would you like to hear some more?
Yes, please.
Let's hear some more. We're going to start this time with, is this Dom or Tom? It's Dom, isn't it?
Dom, yeah, it's Dom.
It's Dom. Dom from Bantam's Banter. If you're a long-time listener of the show, you'll remember joining Bradford's epic League Cup run of a few years ago when you ended up going to Wembley to watch the final.
They had about 14 cult heroes that season.
They did. We got Dom on quite a few times during the season to document that campaign. All that's still on the website. We also had him on, was it last season? We've had him on a few times anyway. And he presents the extremely popular Bantam's Banter podcast. And he gave us his Bradford City cult hero.
Stuart McCall is a cult hero at Bradford City because he's a local lad come good. One of the most iconic, if not the most iconic player to ever wear the claret and amber. He came through the ranks in the 1980s, becoming a star player during the 84-85 league-winning season. Sadly, that season was marred by the devastating fire. In the aftermath that followed, Stuart McCall became a prominent figure, visiting hospitals, attending fans' funerals. He was still a very young player. McCall left for Everton, then on to Rangers, becoming an icon north of the border too. He returned to the Bantams in 1998 and captained the team to promotion to the Premier League. A true leader who would carry the team through a tough game if he had to. He left the club only to return as manager. That didn't go so well for him, but we forgive him. He's one of our own, a fan's favourite, and a real legend down at Valley Parade. He supports Leeds United though, so don't tell anyone that bit.
My name's Richard Beedy, I'm a Bury fan, and my cult hero goes back to the mid-90s. A striker called John Paskin, who was a South African centre-forward who played a fairly key part in our double promotion under Stan Ternent. He didn't hang around long, didn't really make that many starts, but he had a real impact on that successful side.
Hi, my name is Joe Amphlett and I'm a Millwall fan. And my cult hero is Millwall's all-time record goal scorer and current manager, Neil Bomber Harris. Now, it might be a cliche to some, but Neil is one of the few players I've seen play at the Den that actually understands the club and its supporters. He knows how passionate we are and he always matched our passion with his performances on the pitch. But there's one reason why Harris is not just my cult hero, but I think every Millwall fan's cult hero, and that's his ability to never lay down and die. Because Neil has had many setbacks in his career. In 2001 he was diagnosed with cancer, and a year later he was given the all clear, and I remember his comeback goal against Watford so vividly, the absolute joy of being back on that pitch and doing what he did best, and he showed that in his celebration. Now, he's had many doubters in his career, Dennis Wise amongst them. He forced him out of the Den, but thankfully he came back to the club for a second stint where he eventually took over from Teddy Sheringham as our all-time top goal scorer. But even on his return, he was met with more obstacles. Kenny Jackett told him he wasn't in his plans, and I actually remember speaking to Neil at the time and when he'd been left out of the squad and how hurt he was, but how determined he was to get back in as well. And he did, and he changed Jackett's mind and led us to two playoff finals. Of course, we lost one, but thankfully winning the second. And of course, Neil is now our manager and he has no money and not much experience, and I truly hope that his legendary status isn't diminished. But somehow in the back of my mind, I know it will be as big a success off the pitch as he was on it, and that is why Neil Harris is my cult hero.
Thank you very much to everyone who's got in touch with the show this week with your cult heroes. You can still tweet us, by the way, at Wagyu Podcast, and we'll retweet some of those in the coming this week. Your club's cult hero, please. Now, right at the start of that little montage, you heard from Dom Newton-Collins from Bantams Band talking about Stuart McCall. Do you remember when Bradford got promoted to the Premier League?
I know where you're going with this. I certainly do.
Was it under Paul Jewell?
Yeah,
they got promoted. And he very much got on top of his car in the car park. I can't remember if it was in the... I think they got promoted in an afternoon. I think they were playing Hull away, if I remember rightly. I might be wrong. Anyway, I'm not sure if it's the same day or the next day. Basically, bit of a celebration back in the car park at Valley Parade. All the fans there. He gets on the top of one of these cars to do a little dance, parked up in the car park. And he's got a can of something in his hand, some horrific lager, and very much stacks it.
Oh, and stacks it doesn't even begin to do it justice.
No.
It is absolutely superb. And of course, his can of lager very much remains intact throughout the whole process.
I think it's actually been gifted, this, if you're very tech savvy. If you search it, it's on YouTube. It's definitely on YouTube. And I remember on Soccer AM at the time, this was played over and over and over again. So yeah, big credit to Stuart McCall for that. And of course, he went back and managed the club subsequently. Right, what have you got, DC?
I think you very briefly mentioned it before, that there are another sort of strand, if you like, of these cult hero players. Can be players that you hold in high affection because of what they could have been, not necessarily what they did. It might be a player that was on loan for 5 games and was brilliant, but then left, or a player that came for 6 months and then left under a cloud, but you saw something in them that made you want more and you longed to see what they could have done if they'd stayed around a bit longer. And I can think of a player for Watford, and this is a player that I'm sure hardly anyone will have heard of. He played for Watford in the Premier League in the 99-2000 season under Graham Taylor, a Frenchman called Xavier Gravelin. Google him. He played about 6 games, I think, and he scored a couple of goals, scored 2 goals and a winner at home to Southampton on Boxing Day, which is one of our only victories in that season. We came from behind and it was a great goal and a great victory at the time. And then got sent off, I think, in a game away at Sunderland, if my memory serves me correctly. And he was just mad. He was an absolutely mad Frenchman with wild eyes. But he does retain this sort of semi-legendary cult status at Watford because of kind of how nuts he was and the very, very brief glimpse of brilliance that he gave us during that season. And I think there's probably a lot of players like that over the years. And I imagine a lot of them would be foreign players because of the loan system or transfers that were made, sort of free transfers that were made in the mid-90s and stuff. And they're very different to the players like like Helgerson or Stuart McCall or Matt Holland or Scott Murray or these players that are kind of ever present and have come back time and time again and always have a strong relationship with the club. You may only have seen these players play five times, but you kind of hold them in a special place in your heart nonetheless.
Do you know he had, Gravelan, 20 clubs over his 18-year
yeah.
career?
I mean, it just typifies it, yeah.
Well, where do you stand on the kind of one club man being a cult hero, someone like Matt Le Tissier?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I thought that was because you just said because of what they could have been. And obviously with Le Tissier, he was a great player. But, you know, a lot of people say he could have been a world beater if he'd moved to a bigger team, you know, at his peak in the 90s or whatever. He didn't get enough recognition for England. But that only increases his cult status in many ways.
Yeah, well, exactly. Obviously, for Southampton, you kind of have to get down into the semantics and think, what do you mean by this word cult? How literally do you take it? How important is it? I mean, basically, we're talking about players that you love, and that can be for whatever reason. But for Southampton, he is one of their absolute all-time greatest players, and he is Matt Le Tissier, Southampton legend. He's not Matt Le Tissier, former Southampton striker. You know, that's what comes underneath him when he's interviewed on TV and on the radio and stuff. But I suppose you touched on something interesting there. Players can be cult heroes sort of beyond and outside of their club. I'd suggest that Matt Le Tissier is very much a cult sort of hero figure to the wider footballing communities, to fans of football who grew up in the 90s and were watching the earlier days of the Premier League. Because he's a player that never really fulfilled his potential at the top level, never progressed to a top club, didn't play for England as much as he should have done, but he was brilliant. I mean, the man scored some absolutely ludicrously good goals. I remember the goal he scored against Blackburn. I think it was in the season that Blackburn won the league.
Yes,
he dribbled around
when you were
about
a Blackburn
players.
Fan.
Yeah, yeah. Dribbled around about three players and popped it in the top corner from 30 yards. And I mean, the goal that he scored in the last game at the Dell, it's players that do that sort of thing as well. It's, you know, scoring those important goals at the important moments like that. It's amazing, and he very much fit into that category.
Remember, at Wagyu Podcast, if you want to send us any more of your cult heroes, or you can get in touch via the website.
I've got another, sorry to butt in, Mark. I've got another sort of category of these players. It's kind of, we're kind of making this up as we go along this week, as you can probably
evidently
tell. But this is fine. This is going to run and run. I think another sort of wing of the cult hero Hall of Fame, if you like, should be reserved for the players who stood out, not necessarily because of their footballing ability, or maybe their footballing ability shone through despite them not looking like they should be great players. Basically, people that were fat.
Right, yeah.
So I'm instantly, like, Mickey Quinn.
Yes.
Is someone that would spring to mind.
An
excellent goal, an excellent goal-scoring record. Surprisingly good goal-scoring record, really. Even had an amazing record in sort of early days of the Premier League with Coventry. I think he scored in six consecutive games, I think, in the start of the Premier League era.
Something like that,
yeah. It was only recently broken. Neil Shipperley, a man
well,
who...
Well, I was about to mention Shipperley, yeah. But was he that fat when he actually played for Palace, or is it just after his retirement?
Well, not in his early days, but he was carrying a pretty hefty amount of timber when he scored the winner for them in the playoff final against West Ham.
Yes. Okay.
Well,
into
into the noughties. Other players who, you've got old Kevin McNulty at Luton Town, who's still there, still there today. Dean Windass.
Yeah.
What's the big striker? Parkinson.
John Parkin.
John Parkin, yeah.
Yeah.
Of Hull City, of Cardiff City fame. Kevin Pressman in the goalkeeping stakes.
Great penalty against Wolves back in the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the list could go on and on. But yeah, I'd like to hear more.
Thomas Brolin. Would he count?
Yeah.
Razor Ruddock.
Well, Razor, yeah. I'm not having Brolin, really.
Okay, fine.
It was very much the weight, piling on the weight very much signalled the end of his career and the decline, the sudden and rapid decline of his career. Razor Ruddock, yeah, absolutely another one.
Grant Holt. Maybe Grant Holt.
Grant Holt. Andy Reid. Bit harsh, maybe.
Yeah. I'm just looking down a list of fat...
Neville Southall. Was enormous when he finished his playing days. And if you've seen him lately, he looks like a genetically modified hamster.
Did you... Oh, is it on... Did you see, you probably didn't see it, and I wouldn't blame you because it's bloody awful, but Fletch and Sav had him on earlier this season.
Yeah.
They basically had to wheel in an extra large sofa just to get him on by himself. So
he's
I definitely think
gone to seed.
If we had a pie chart.
He doesn't
chart,
care either. He does not care one jot.
You know in the football cliches, he does like when he does all those diagrams and like pie charts that go... Mm. You know, that cross over, and there's some sort of, we should do, if anyone's very good with Photoshop and could do as one of these, just to be grateful. They're very much the various sort of subsections of a cult hero. So we've had one club men, we've had fat players, we've had what else have we had? We've had ill-disciplined players, players who promised more than they delivered. The list is endless. So if you could send us yours, please.
You've also got another, you know, people like Neil Lamptey who've had podcasts named after them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You've got also, if you delve into the football manager side of things, the likes of Cherno Samba, a player who was absolutely brilliant in the virtual world, but never even came close to delivering on that potential in real life. And Freddie Adu,
I was
pushing
about
it
to
a
say,
bit now, I think. We are, really, yeah.
Did he actually play in England, Freddie Adu? I'm not sure.
No, I don't think. No, not in England, no.
I'd love to know what he's doing these days. Anyway, so yeah, I think we've covered a large...
We'll have to get Adam on. Old Adam Hurry, football cliches, and get him to really... We need to ratify these categories.
Well, I've got the book, but I'm not at home, sadly. But I have got the book, so I'm sure there's a section in there all about the cult hero.
You've also got players from way back, you know, before the ubiquitous television coverage, the 24 cameras at every game sort of era. People like... The famous one would be Robin Friday, who has had books and documentaries made about him, a player who... Basically, no one ever really saw play unless you were at Reading for a couple of seasons in the 70s or 80s, I think it was, who people say is the best player they've seen since George Best, but was just a complete and utter loose cannon off the pitch and had a short career and never fulfilled his potential. And I'm sure there's loads of other players like that, brilliant, brilliant players who me and you and fans of this current era just would never see because simply there isn't the footage that exists to this day.
I've got one. It's not along those lines. It's along the lines of... someone who's a cult hero because of one particular goal, and that's Michael Thomas for Arsenal.
Jimmy Glass.
Oh, Jimmy, have we not mentioned him? Jimmy Glass, exactly. So this is another subcategory. Players that, yeah, maybe didn't sort of stay at the club particularly long, but they were famous for one particular moment that shaped the future for the good or for the bad of that football club.
Steve Fletcher at Bournemouth.
Yes, the goal which...
Players that save their clubs on, you know, when they're really right at on their deathbed, as it were, and pull them back from the brink.
Players who just have stupid songs named after them that just live on. Just like his name is a shop one that I was talking about earlier. Sean Gota at Manchester City, feed the goat and he will score. All this kind of thing. Things like that become embedded in football culture. And other fans end up singing or chanting... those chants with their own players.
Yeah, Manchester United fans still sing about Diego Forlan on a regular basis.
What do they sing?
Well, they sing his song, whatever Forlan's song is. I don't know what it is, but I've seen him interviewed about it. And I've seen it written loads of times. He was a player that never really did anything of note in Manchester, apart from a couple of important goals here and there, but they still hold him dear to their hearts.
Do you remember William Prunier?
I do. Well, sort of. I don't remember him at all, but I know he's sort of that man that gets brought up of those sort of obscure Manchester United players on Sporkle or on it boxes.
Yeah. Cue your jokes about me being a United fan, but William Prunier, bald-headed Frenchman, scored a header against QPR, I think in 94-95, to get a 2-2 draw. That's what I remember about him. I think he played about four or five games. And then left, and what, of course, Federico Maceda. For a brief period at Manchester United because of one goal against Aston Villa.
We're in danger of straying far too far away from the Football League here, Mark, aren't we? Yeah.
We have really shifted the goalposts here. Sorry about that. Shall we wrap it up at that point, perhaps? Unless there's any more cul-de-sacs you want to take us down?
No, I think we've been around the whole estate.
We have,
cul-de-sacs, drives, crescents, news.
It's fair to say that there wasn't a set structure for this week's podcast. I remember,
but that's fine.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
Why does it have to be a set
absolutely.
Structure?
Years ago, I remember years ago when
it's total
first,
podcasting.
The first, yeah, first year we used to do this. It used to be like minutely laid out, and now we're just. Rambling sort of aimlessly around, but I'm enjoying it. I hope you are too. That was our cult hero special, and hopefully we'll get more on throughout the season. I like the idea of an in conversation with section, maybe as a mini episode idea.
So keep them coming. Keep suggesting them.
Yes, please do. Email via the website, wearegoingup.co.uk, or you can tweet us at Wagyu Podcast. Remember the SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. And if you go to audible.co.uk/goingup, you can download a free audiobook of your choice. There is thousands and thousands, quite literally, to pick from. And if you've already registered and got one, you can still do that. So please do go to audible.co.uk/goingup and pick yourself up an audiobook, maybe inspired by what we've been chatting about. I'm sure there's some obscure autobiographies that have been voiced up on Audible. Get on there and take advantage of that offer. So from one broom covered in Salford to one broom covered in London. Cheers, DC.
Thank you.
Are we going
to enjoyed it?
Yes. What's the plan? And with all the sort of goings on in the last week or so, are we going to revert back to more of a normal show next week, or are we going to keep our special theme going?
Well, I think, as we've said, this special theme can run and run and can be an ongoing thing for as long as we want it to be. But I think we should also dip our toes into the water of the current goings on, and you know, check in with people at Newport County, at Fleetwood, at Rotherham, etc., and see what's going on, because it's interesting times for those clubs. You know, they're all in different situations, but you know, they all need to make appointments and try and kickstart their season. So, yeah, maybe a slightly more normal, in inverted commas, if you like, episode next week. But we will be there nonetheless. We will have an episode for you next week.
I don't think Terry Butcher's going to take any of our calls, if I'm brutally honest.
No, but Steve Evans might.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Steve Evans would. Steve Evans will take whatever calls Steve Evans likes. So that'll be next week. Thanks for listening.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.